This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. Thalassemia is a group of genetic blood disorders. People who have thalassemia have a genetic defect of their red blood cells, the inability to sort of produce hemoglobin. Am I correct? And with me to discuss pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is a diagnostic process to detect thalassemia, is Dr. Surinder Singh. He's a consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. Welcome to the show, Dr. Surinder. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for having me here, Mira.
Dr. Surinder, do you want to go through with me in very layman's terms? Mm-hmm. What is thalassemia? How would you describe it?
Basically, thalassemia is one of the most commonest inherited genetic blood disorders. Mm-hmm. The red cell component of the blood, which carries oxygen, has something called hemoglobin. Yep. And basically, there's a defect in the hemoglobin synthesis. You know, there's a globin part to it, and that part gets defectively formed, which makes the hemoglobin unable to do its job of carrying oxygen effectively. Most people are just carriers of this disease, yep, and they actually have no symptoms at all. So they don't even know that they have this particular disorder. It's only when they get married and the spouse also happens to be a carrier of the same disease that there's a 1 in 4 chance that the child may actually get both the abnormal genes from both the parents. And that's when you get the thalassemia majors, which are the problematic ones.
Okay, what's so bad about this disease?
Basically, what happens is, let's say if a woman who is a thalassemia carrier gets pregnant, she might find that her hemoglobin levels are starting to drop because of the increased requirement of for hemoglobin during the pregnancy. So she might need some supplementation. But if the child ends up having thalassemia major, especially with alpha thalassemia major, that's not compatible with life. The child would not be born alive.
Okay.
And if it's beta thalassemia major, the child can be born alive, but the child would require blood transfusions throughout its life.
Okay. And do you see many women coming in who are pregnant, who sort of never knew that they were carriers, and then after which, you know, when they come and see you after pregnancy, they do indeed have thalassemia? Then what do you do then?
Basically, what we need to do is to counsel them about their disease and the implications of it. And we also have to inform them that they need to get their partner screened for the disease as well. Mm-hmm. And then also when the child is born, we have to be sure that the child has not inherited that particular disorder, because then the child, when he grows up, will also need genetic counseling about having a partner with a similar condition.
Okay. Is it widespread in Malaysia?
Well, it affects 1 in every 20 Malaysians, so I would say it's quite common over
here. That's 1/5 of the population.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That's quite a bit. Why does this disease continue to exist? I mean, does it just spread, or is it just purely through hereditary, you know, how it passes on through the genes?
Well, basically, it's a hereditary disease. It's just that people don't know they have it. It's only when they go to a clinic and they get a blood test done and the doctor is suspicious that the patient may be having thalassemia that they actually start doing tests which are specifically able to diagnose the disease.
Okay. The usual blood screening tests don't... thalassemia is not one of those that they usually test for?
Not really.
Okay,
not really.
So we need to request for it.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I could be a carrier, I wouldn't even know it, right?
Exactly.
Right, isn't it? Yeah, so you were saying, so it continues to exist?
Yes.
Okay. What are the current ways of treating thalassemia?
Basically, you can't treat the disease. It's a genetic disorder. It's lifelong. All you could do is just help to prevent the symptoms from the disease, especially like, for example, when women get pregnant and there's an increased requirement for the hemoglobin, you may want to supplement them with folic acid and iron tablets if you need to. But apart from that, there's no real treatment per se. The main problem here actually is to prevent thalassemia major. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing.
Okay, which is the one where you will need, which can kill you.
Yes.
Okay. Why do you feel that these forms of treatment are really not enough? You obviously do, because you've come in to talk about something called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis.
Yes.
So what you're trying to do is nip the problem right at the beginning before it even comes about. But how do you do that? If it's hereditary, how do you do that?
Basically, what happens is a couple, you know, gets married and they have a child, and neither of them knows they are carrying the thalassemia disorder. They're both carriers. So they are both asymptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
And the child has a 1 in 4 chance of getting thalassemia major. And this, the first pregnancy happens to have a child with thalassemia major, and they end up having aborting the child. You know, the child is born prematurely and survives just a few hours after birth and then dies. So then the couple finds out that they actually have this disorder, and that's what they have encountered is because of this particular genetic disease.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the couple is traumatized and they'd be very worried about the next pregnancy. So they'd want to know what treatment options are there to prevent this from happening. up till about the time when PGD or genetic diagnosis came about, we only could to actually let them get pregnant a second time and then actually take the sample from the baby's umbilical cord blood and then check whether the baby had the disease or not. But you couldn't do anything to treat the disease when the child already has thalassemia major. All you can do is just counsel the parents and then, you know, inform them about the outcome that the child is going to have. But with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, you're actually able to screen the baby before the patient even gets pregnant and make sure that the baby that's going to be implanted into the mother is free of the thalassemia major.
How do you do that?
Well, what we do is we combine the IVF technology that we currently do for patients who are infertile.
Okay.
And normally after an IVF procedure is done, we get embryos, which are the babies in the first few days of life, and we transfer them back into the mother's uterus or the womb. But with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, we're actually able to take one tiny little cell out of that embryo and do a genetic test and screen for the disease we are looking for, make sure that the baby is free of that particular disease and transfer it back.
Okay. But this can only apply in IVF.
Yes, you are right. Exactly.
So if you don't do IVF, you can't screen for it.
Exactly.
Okay, and when you do in fact remove one of the, what did you say again? Was it
the
a
cells,
cell?
Yeah.
Will that not compromise on the health of that embryo?
Actually, yes and no. Basically, there are certain windows when you can do a biopsy. You can't biopsy a baby at any stage of its growth. You only can do it at the time when the egg is retrieved. You can take one polar body out of the egg. But then you'll only know from the mother's side, the mother's genetic makeup. You won't know from about the father's side. The other time is when the baby is 3 days old, a day three embryo, when it's about between 6 to 10 cells. If you take out one cell at that point in time, it doesn't really cause much harm to the baby, but you've got to be very careful on how you do it, not to cause any unnecessary stress to the embryo. If there are less than 6 cells, then there's not enough material for the baby to continue to grow. If you take out when it's more than 10 cells, then the cells have already started to communicate with one another,
yes,
their gap junctions. So the 6 to 10 cell is a one window. The second window of opportunity is on the 5th day of life when the baby has started to become a blastocyst. You can take some cells out from the one layer called the trophectoderm layer, and that doesn't really cause any harm to the child. And the blastocysts are quite good samples where you can get a few cells without causing any harm to the baby.
Okay. What sort of information do you get from the embryo?
Well, basically, because of this ability to detect genetic diseases at such an early stage, you know, with the baby still in the laboratory, so to speak, there have been a number of genetic tests that have been developed over the years. One of the early ones was called FISH, fluorescent in situ hybridization, which only could check for a few chromosomes, like for Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, Patau syndrome. And then there was the advent of comparative genomic hybridization, CGH, which is the technology we are using currently. That technology could check for all 23 pairs of chromosomes, but the problem was that it took 5 days to get the results. So you had to freeze those embryos and then transfer them back in a future frozen transfer cycle. But now with the new methods called the microarray CGH, we can get a turnaround time of 24 to 48 hours, so we can actually get the results back before the we can actually transfer the babies back in a fresh cycle.
Okay.
The next good thing that came about was PCR, polymerase chain reaction, where we can actually look for specific genetic disorders. If a father or mother is a carrier of a specific genetic disease, a single gene disease, we can actually make sure that we screen the baby to be sure that the baby did not inherit that specific genetic mutation.
Okay.
So thalassemia is like that. You can actually screen the baby for alpha or beta thalassemias.
Okay. And but as we still go back to the fact that this only can be done for people who, you know, opt for IVF.
Correct.
What about for the rest of us who haven't gone through IVF?
Well, basically, the couple who has got, well, who husband and wife both have thalassemia carrier status, they will have to go for an IVF cycle if they want to be able to screen their baby to be sure that the baby is not affected with thalassemia major.
So to move one step before that, you need to first find out if you're a carrier or not.
Exactly.
Okay, so when you do find out, then you should opt for IVF.
Exactly.
Okay, and then chance. Okay, if you don't, cannot, let's say you cannot afford IVF, then what do you do? I mean, does that mean that you cannot have children or you shouldn't be having children, or is it a big risk?
Well, you can have children, it's just that you have to realize that there's a 1 in 4 chance that the child may have thalassemia major. So that counseling may have to be done to the parents before they embark on a pregnancy, and during the pregnancy we will have to see them and see if they are keen to do the test early in their pregnancy to detect this particular disorder.
Okay.
But if the child is affected with thalassemia major, there isn't really much that the couple can do about it.
All right. And this whole idea of undergoing pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, is it a very costly one?
Unfortunately, at this point in time, it is. the IVF cycle alone costs about 15,000 ringgit.
Yes, it does.
And the genetic testing at this point is also very expensive. It may cost anything from 15,000 to 20,000 ringgit at this point.
What are we paying for? Is it lab cost? Is it the cost of your expertise in, you know, sort of looking through the cell and to finding out what's going on in there?
Basically, the most expensive part of the whole procedure in the IVF part of it is actually the laboratory cost and the drugs. They are very expensive. The
drugs for?
To stimulate the eggs to grow. So those are quite expensive. And then with regards to the genetic testing, the test itself is very expensive. So basically, the test costs about 15,000, and sometimes if you have to source it from outside labs, it can even cost as high as 20,000 ringgit.
Wow.
So the cost at this point in time is quite expensive, but the most important thing is at least such a test is available. It gives couples a chance to at least conceive a child who is free of the disease, and it gives them early reassurance, you know, rather than have to go for some therapeutic abortion and things like that. At least it gives them early assurance that this child is going to be healthy and it's going to be free of the disease, and it gives them a chance to at least get that satisfaction early on in their pregnancy.
Okay, so, but then the question remains, if the child indeed is carrying the thalassemia, then what happens?
Well, if it's alpha thalassemia, unfortunately, alpha thalassemia major is not compatible with life. Beta thalassemia majors, these babies used to live up till their 20s because of the repeated blood transfusions, and they used to have a lot of iron overload in their liver and heart. But nowadays, with chelation therapy and all that, they are able to actually live longer lives, which controls their iron levels. So beta thalassemia major babies can survive, but unfortunately, they have to go for blood transfusions throughout their lives, and that, of course, carries risks.
Okay. When we come back, we'll find out how to overcome this fear that if the screening of these embryos can cause parents to decide to terminate the embryos based on false negatives, then what happens? We'll come back and find out up next. If you have a question for Dr. Surinder, send it through. The number is 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. We're discussing thalassemia, which is a group of genetic blood disorders, hereditary, and can be a problem if, you know, both husband and wife are carriers, can be a problem to the baby. And Dr. Surinder Singh, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist in the studio with me to discuss pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is a diagnostic process in which, well, unfortunately, at this point in time, can only be applied if you undergo IVF, whereby a cell is removed from the embryo, tested for thalassemia, and then put back into the embryo, and embryo continues to grow. Now, there is this fear, Dr. Surinder, if the screening of the embryos can cause parents to decide to terminate the embryo based on false negatives, then how legitimate is that fear?
Well, the word terminate is a rather interesting word, because when you talk about a pregnancy and she's already pregnant and she wants to terminate the pregnancy, that's of course a very different meaning altogether. But in pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, the baby has not even been put back into the womb yet. It's still in the laboratory. So this is the advantage of IVF with pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, in that the patient has not even conceived when they make their decision. So what we do is, of course, there are certain risks to every procedure, and also in the screening, in genetic screening, there are also chances of things like LL dropout or mosaicism, which can actually cause erroneous results. But thankfully, the risk is very low. It's only about 1-2%. So normally, if you find that the baby is free of the disease, there's a 98% chance that this baby is actually a healthy baby. So if the baby was mistakenly thought to have thalassemia major, of course, then the decision would be not to transfer it back. But if the baby is found to be free of the disease, then of course that will be the one that will be selected to be transferred back. And if the baby is not transferred back, the couple has a choice whether they want to allow it to have its natural fate or whether they want to freeze the baby for future testing again or for future use.
Which can be done.
Can be done.
Okay. All right. Yeah. To me, it just sounds so, you know, ethically and morally incorrect. IVF itself has huge debate surrounding it.
True.
What more manipulating the embryo, which is, you know, still, I don't know, in my mind, it's life already, because the sperm and the egg have already come together. It has been fertilized. So when is it considered life?
Well, up till the third day of life, the baby is still actually on sort of a automatic control, so to speak. You know, the maternal genes are actually controlling the events in the embryo. It is only on the third day of life that the baby's genome actually comes alive, the DNA comes alive and start directing events within the embryo. So I would think that whether the baby is healthy or unhealthy at that point in time, it is still going to grow up to a healthy embryo on day 3, but it's on day 5 that you start finding that, you know, the babies who are actually healthy tend to go on to become blastocysts on day 5. Mm-hmm. Whereas those which are not healthy, especially those who have monosomies, they never make it up to day 5 of life. And even if that baby was an abnormal embryo on day 5 and you put it back into the womb, the chances are high that it would never even implant, because the lining of the endometrium is very, very sensitive, and that is why you find that the incidence of abnormal babies delivered at 9 months is very, very low. Mm-hmm. And most of these babies, even if they do implant at all, about 20% of them end up with a miscarriage, because these babies were actually abnormal. And studies have been done as early as the 70s where they found that all these aborted fetuses, 72% of them actually carried some genetic defect or the other. So they seldom make it past the first trimester of pregnancy.
Okay, so and hence the reason why when, you know, miscarriages occur, we always say there's probably a reason as to why miscarriages occur. Lim is asking, and he says it may be off topic, but he wants to know, he's a beta thalassemia minor carrier. Mm-hmm. And he's asking, would I be wrong to say that all thalassemia carriers worldwide have the same singular pair of ancestors?
Not really.
Why is that?
Well, thalassemias are common in certain parts of the world. For example, in the Southeast Asia, in parts of India, Middle East, parts of the Mediterranean, like say in Greece and Italy. Mm-hmm. So there are certain areas where thalassemia is more prevalent. But with worldwide migration of immigrants and things like that, you know, diseases like this, which were never seen in Europe, in London, Europe, in US, are now becoming increasingly prevalent because of the mass migration of people globally. So at the end of the day, if you were to do a test, let's say for thalassemia screening for beta thalassemia, for example, in UK, it'd probably be about 1 in 100 people or 1 in 1,000 people. But if you go to Cyprus, it'll be 1 in every 7 people will probably have beta thalassemia carriers. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it is mainly from certain parts of the world that people get it, but it is not from the same ancestors. I wouldn't
not necessarily
say that. Okay. Yes,
two individuals who are carriers, more like it.
Yes.
Back in the day. So as you said, you know, it's a very costly affair, one to do IVF and then to go on to do the diagnosis. And then you spend all this money and you find that, you know, when the baby is born, baby has thalassemia. Then what happens? Can I come back and get my money back, for an example? I mean, this is a lot of money that we're investing.
Very true. It's important that before couples embark on this, they get a very thorough genetic counseling. So the geneticist usually will sit with them and explain to them about the risks of the procedure, the fact that even if the baby is found to be healthy and implanted, the baby may not actually implant in the first place. They may not even get a 100% chance of getting a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And there is all these risks mosaicism and LL dropouts that may lead to erroneous results. Yeah. So couples need to be known that this is not 100% foolproof technology. There is this still 1 or 2% risk of errors in the diagnosis. But at the end of the day, I think the most important thing is that couples be told that at least there is one method for them to be given some form of early assurance in their pregnancy. Because you ask any couple who has been through a pregnancy and then they discover that the child, you know, has become hydropic and delivered prematurely and the baby is abnormal. And not only that, you know, some mothers who carry babies with thalassemia major may even have high blood pressure. They call it severe preeclampsia.
Yeah.
The babies are bigger than usual. The delivery has a lot of obstetric complications. The placenta can be quite huge. So there are other pregnancy-related complications as well. And a couple who have gone through something like this would be very, depressed about the whole thing and really worried and anxious about the next pregnancy. They don't want this to recur. And the doctor is saying that there's no guarantee. There's a 1 in 4 chance it can happen again. So this technology at least gives them some form of early assurance that, look, you know, there is a way for us to screen your baby before you even get pregnant and put in a baby that's free of disease.
Okay. You know, Dr. Surinder, I've always done shows on counseling and, on genetics and gene testing and mm-hmm. things like that. And counseling is a huge part
True.
Of the whole process. How important is it and how do you go about counseling these parents? Because you got to do it before, you got to do it after, you
yes.
know, it really needs to be handled in a very tactful manner.
True.
How do you do that?
Well, at the end of the day, it's important that you get the geneticist to do the genetic counseling for them, telling them about the technology and the pros and cons. Then we also need the fertility counselors to counsel them about the entire fertility treatment that they're about to undergo. It's quite a lengthy process. It can be quite emotionally and physically taxing for the patients, not to mention the financial cost as well. So I think this counseling should be done early in the pregnancy and throughout, I mean early in the treatment, and throughout the treatment they also need to have all their needs and questions answered as well. And ultimately, when they get pregnant and everything is okay, I think that that outcome is actually what everybody wants. Mm-hmm. But I think the counseling process, like you rightfully said, is a very important process that must take place early, and the couple must be able to ask all the questions they want, have all their questions answered, given adequate time to think about what they're about to undergo. And once they think they're mentally ready to start the whole procedure, only then we start them on this.
Okay, so if they have in fact found that the, you know, diagnostic process has revealed that there is some abnormalities, then your only option is not to implant that embryo.
Correct.
All right. There's no chance of fixing the cell in any way as yet?
Unfortunately, no.
Not yet.
It's only okay. Detecting the disease. But having said that, there is this possibility of treating a sibling who, let's say, is a beta thalassemia major. Let's say the couple has got one child who's got beta thalassemia major. The child now is on regular blood transfusions and they're trying to find a way to cure his disease. Mm-hmm. It is possible for us to do something called HLA typing to find the right tissue match and then do genetic testing as well as HLA typing to find a sibling who is the same tissue match as the child who already suffers from the disease. Mm-hmm. Transfer and make sure the baby is free of the disease first. Transfer this baby back. Hopefully she gets pregnant, and after she has delivered the child, you can actually do a bone marrow transplant so that you can actually save or cure the elder sibling of the disease.
Right. Wow, has this been done before?
We are working on one case at this point in time. It's mm-hmm. a foreign couple, and we'll see how it turns out. But we're still midway through the process.
Okay, you have a very huge interest in genetics.
Well, we are actually fertility doctors. It's just that now the field of genetics has advanced to such an extent that we are able to work with geneticists very closely. Their technology is so good that and it meets our field in such a way that we produce babies. And then we have the babies in our laboratories and we're going to transfer the babies back. And they're saying, look, we are able to check these babies for genetic defects before you put them back. So there's a marriage of two fields of medicine, you know, reproduction as well as genetics. They call it reprogenetics. So it's a whole new field, actually. And basically, the field of genetics is really showing a lot of expansion, a lot of advancement, and, you know, a lot of new things coming about. And they're able to actually do genetic tests on such a small amount of tiny bit of DNA that we get for them from this process. So from the fertility standpoint, we need to be able to produce healthy embryos and have good pregnancy rates and have good biopsy techniques. And then once it's given to the geneticist, it is up to them to give us reliable, robust results.
That's right. And do you see this diagnostic process being available for other sorts of embryonic diseases?
Well, if the technology can become cheaper, I think there will come a day in the future when everybody going for IVF will probably have a genetic screening to be sure that the baby that is going to be transferred back is free of the common disorders like Down syndrome, Edwards syndrome, Patau syndrome. And this in turn, I think, will also help to increase the implantation rates. So rather than transferring three babies and hoping for one of them to implant, and also taking a risk of having twins or triplets, I think there will come a day when all babies will be genetically screened and only one single healthy baby will be transferred back. So towards the end result of having a single embryo for transfer and having the best embryos available for transfer by doing a thorough genetic testing on the baby, I think that will be the way forward.
Mm-hmm. But then we'll have perfect healthy beings, and that's not quite normal either. Don't
yeah,
you think?
I agree.
You'll be out of a job. There will be no need for doctors or this show. Do you think that's even possible?
Well, the current evidence that is coming out, there were three papers so far that have been published that have showed higher implantation rates when couples routinely had genetic testing of their embryos. So I think this technology probably is going to be a very interesting technology. I think there's still early days yet, but I think in the years to come, this might be something quite common where the couples will say, look, why should I go for IVF, get pregnant and end up with a miscarriage, or get pregnant and end up with a baby with Down syndrome and then have to make a tough decision of, you know, terminating and this and that, when we, there's actually a way for us to now screen the babies, make sure the baby is genetically healthy, because unhealthy babies, even if you transfer them back, they will not even implant.
Yeah.
So the best thing is to just choose one healthy baby and make sure it implants, and that I think will be the best outcome for couples.
Are there any other alternatives to screen for thalassemia?
At this point, it's just
at the embryonic stage.
At this point, this is the only way to screen it at the earliest possible stage, like the extreme method of screening, you know, where you take it all the way up to the time before the baby even implants. And I think that's what makes this technology rather exciting.
Okay. Any other options? Cheaper alternatives, maybe?
Well, unfortunately, the only other option is, of course, it's good with the couples, you know, before they get married and all that, to do some genetic testing to screen themselves for thalassemia and all that. And to be sure that if they have, the couples are both suffering from or carrying that abnormal gene, they must be given adequate genetic counseling, so at least they are aware of the options that they have.
Is there research being done to come up with cheaper alternatives so that, you know, it'll be more accessible to everyone?
Unfortunately, at this point in time, I don't see any other methods that are available out there that can actually give couples another option. So I think if couples are screened beforehand and they avoid having a baby with this kind of disorder, that'll be the best. But I think at this point in time, there are still so many couples who don't even know that they are carriers, and ultimately, you know, it's only when they end up with a bad obstetric outcome that they come and look for help.
Does it necessarily mean that if you are indeed a carrier, you will have a bad obstetric outcome?
Both the partners have to be carriers. If one partner is a carrier, then there's nothing to worry about, because at the very most, the baby will just inherit the same carrier status from you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only when the other partner is having the same genetic carrier, only then they have problems.
Okay, and the chances of that happening is, what's the
I don't
prevalence?
Have a statistic, but it is not very prevalent.
Okay, not very prevalent then.
Yes.
Okay, that is a good thing.
Yes.
But as you said, thalassemia seems to be more prevalent in certain countries.
Yes.
Asian countries, Mediterranean, as you said.
Correct.
Not really in Europe or, you know, Caucasian countries. Amongst the Caucasian people?
Among the Italians and Greeks.
You do have. Okay,
yes.
So there are. But it depends. That's rather weird, isn't it? I mean, is there a reason for that?
Well, it's just that this disease seems to be prevalent in these specific groups, and, you know, and then with mass migration, it seems to be now getting more prevalent in other parts of the globe as well.
So it's just blurred now.
Yeah.
We don't really know. Okay, so that's great. So your final message on thalassemia and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis.
Basically, I think couples should be aware of such a disease, that it exists, and the couples who wish to screen themselves can actually get the screening test done. And at least it gives them more choices, more options. It gives them knowledge, and I think that will help them to make their reproductive choices more wisely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Dr. Surinder Singh, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist on thalassemia and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis on The Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.